Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. And I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Baratunde, and welcome to We're Having a Moment, a limited podcast series where I try to make sense of this defining moment around race and policing in the United States. If you have thoughts you want to share with me about this series, hit me up on my community text number, 202-894-8844. Just send a text with the word WHAM, W-H-A-M, in the body. And consider signing up for my email newsletter at baratunde.com or on any social media account where you can find a Baratunde. It's probably me. This is episode 5. Hello, white people. Hello, world. Remember team sports? Pre-pandemic activity involving groups of people working in close proximity to achieve a common goal. Sometimes involves concussions, sometimes involves personal growth and development. Just depends on the sport. I've been thinking about team sports a lot lately, and not just because I miss watching them on TV, but because I feel like the metaphor works for who's participating in this moment. What makes this moment feel different from others? I'm used to a certain player on the field when it comes to defending Black lives, and that player's Black. But I'm seeing a lot of white people show up in more expansive, sometimes more clumsy, more eager ways than usual. Let's take protests. I'm pretty sure the color palette of those showing up to these protests this summer are much wider and whiter than usual. The people who are calling city halls and lobbying for changes to policy are not just Black activists on the ground. They are white people who've been waking up trying to get involved. The folks removing statues of Confederate losers, and it's important to remind ourselves that they lost and we don't generally celebrate losers. The folks taking those statues down aren't just Black people or Indigenous people. They're white people, and the folks defending the takedowns are not just Black. I see you, Taylor Swift, out there with the cogent argument on Twitter for why we need to remove these statues in your home state of Tennessee. I saw Taylor Swift tweet that, and I retweeted it, and I still can't believe that I live in a world where I retweeted Taylor Swift on the subject of white supremacy because her stance was so dope. More of that, please. We've seen this movement called Pass the Mic online and on social media where famous white people, folks with large followings, literally pass their accounts over to less famous people of color with something to say. And we've seen a series of cancellations, of course. Rest in peace, cops. After decades of dehumanizing Black people, you can finally retire. Hopefully no pension for the show. Rest in peace, Aunt Jemima. After decades of dehumanizing Black people, you got to go, and you're gone. And the one I did not see coming. Rest in peace, Confederate flag at NASCAR events. What? Yeah, I didn't see that one coming. Something's different. You hear what I'm saying? I've heard a lot of companies issuing statements. Shoe companies, makeup companies, hair gel companies, issuing statements in support of Black lives. Now, some of that is a performance. Some of that is PR pressure. But still, it's different. What's more valuable than those statements are the companies that are going farther and pledging to change the makeup of their upper management, of their boards, of how they make their products and deliver their services. That is more meaningful, the commitment to an anti-racist organization and the use of one's own power to create more good in the world and more equity in the world. And this is beyond anecdotal. I know there was a lot of reading during this pandemic about how to make sourdough bread, but the numbers are written now, and some of the top-selling books in this country are things like White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo and How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi. And I think it's a lot of white people buying those books. And on a personal note, I've been getting a lot of texts from my white friends just checking in, seeing how I'm doing, seeing if maybe I could help them out with a statement or an education. And maybe there's people who got my number because I gave it out at the top of a very public podcast. Can't entirely blame them. This feels different, and yet it reminded me of something I had heard before. I had to go way back to 1967 and reread the words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who wrote in 1967 in the book, Where Do We Go From Here?, the following paragraph. In spite of the hard reality that many blatant forms of injustice could not exist without the acquiescence of white liberals, the fact remains that a sound resolution of the race problem in America will rest with those white men and women who consider themselves as generous and decent human beings. Edmund Burke said on one occasion, "When evil men combine, good men must unite." This is the pressing challenge confronting the white liberal. When evil men plot, good men must plan. When evil men burn and bomb, good men must build and bind. When evil men conspire to preserve an unjust status quo, good men must unite to bring about the birth of a society undergirded by justice. Nothing can be more detrimental to the health of America at this time than for liberals to sink into a state of apathy and indifference. MLK, still bringing it, still got it, still got the words for the moment, so many moments after his own moment. And it feels to me like the white liberal, and I take that not as a political designation, but as a state of mind, someone who sees themselves as generous and decent, that the white liberal King wrote about has, at least in part, maybe temporarily, a little bit, gotten the message. And that's great. That has helped me feel less alone. That has helped so many of us feel less alone. Because the hard truth is, we will not bring an end to systemic racism by the efforts of Black people alone, or Indigenous people alone, or people of color alone. We're going to need white people. Just as we are not going to dismantle systemic misogyny and sexism by the efforts of women alone. We men need to be a part of that too. So it brings me a level of gratitude and joy and shock and a little hesitation, but mostly joy, when I see so many white people in America showing up for Black lives. And I want to acknowledge that, because that is a key part of how I've been thinking about this moment, that we're not alone in the moment.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there. I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage, for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But it's not just white people in America showing up that has made me feel less alone and been a sign of solidarity. To quote the Star Wars franchise, there is another. And that other is the whole rest of the world. We have seen the whole world show up in this moment, physically take to the streets in this moment in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter moment and movement in the U.S. I've seen it on various TV channels and all kinds of social media feeds. I'm talking about rallies in London, UK, in Lagos, Nigeria, Mexico City, Auckland, New Zealand, where I saw people perform the powerful haka dance of the indigenous Maori people. I still get emotional when I think about it, and definitely when I hear it. But these demonstrations haven't just been about solidarity with us in the U.S. It's also been about the fight for Black lives in each of those countries, especially the European countries. It turns out I know some Black people in Europe. Yeah, and you're going to meet one of them very soon. Truly, my favorite part of making this show has been the ability to hopefully introduce you to voices that you haven't heard from before. Voices like Diana Arce. Diana is a Black, Latinx, Alaskan-born artist and researcher who's been living in Berlin since 2004. She's the founder of this political nonprofit speech karaoke bar. It's called Politaoke. She also created and directs Artists Without a Cause. That's a nonprofit that supports and researches arts and activism and the intersection of those two. She also, because she's mad busy, created something called the White Guilt Cleanup Project. And you should just Google that one. Google White Guilt Cleanup and see what you get back. I last saw Diana in person in Berlin in the summer of 2019, almost exactly 1 year ago today. Remember when the EU let Americans in? That was nice. At the time, Diana was explaining to me the situation of Black people in Germany and the Black Lives Matter work that she was helping organize there. Yes, there is a Black Lives Matter organization in Berlin. So for this episode, I knew I needed to talk with Diana about this moment we're in right now. We spoke via Skype, because honestly, I needed a break from Zoom, okay?
So the Black Lives Matter movement in Berlin actually started 4 years ago. And there was the first Black Lives Matter protest, I think in 2016 was the first one. And that was primarily, the first, very first one was primarily about police violence in the U.S. It was started by an American, the first one was produced by an American. And basically, we've been having the same problems as Black people here. But it's even worse because there's an illusion, even among Germans, that Black people are not German and there are no Black people here unless they're migrants or they're expats. And so there's a long history of like Afro-Germans going back 500-600 years, and they've been completely erased from everything, from all of society. So there's this level of invisibility that Black Germans suffer, that are like suffer under, and then there's this feeling from like the dominant German society that we dealt with the Holocaust, so we're good, we don't see color, and everything is fine. But when we look at police violence, when we look at deaths in custody, it's the majority of it is are Black people, and it's Black people or POCs. And we just had on the 18th, what was it, the 18th of June, we have a Black Moroccan man who was murdered by the police. He was apparently brandishing a knife and he was shot in the back by police. So every year we have one of these stories come up, and there's another Black man in Germany, Ori Jalloh, was murdered in 2005. Well, the police won't say he's murdered, and officially by law, I cannot say he's murdered.
Okay.
But he was handcuffed to a mattress on the floor of a cell. And according to the police, he lit himself on fire and committed suicide on a flameproof mattress with no actual, he had nothing on him. He was in custody. And rather than looking into it, the local government in Sachsen-Anhalt, they decided to basically write off the investigation and say, we're no longer going to investigate this anymore. And that's from 2005. So people have been fighting since 2005 to get this investigated. And we continually have these incidences, but whenever something pops off in the US, what you end up having here is you have the white majority jumping up and saying, racism is such a horrible thing. It's so bad what's going on in the United States. But then you have Black people here who are like, great that you think that racism is so bad in the United States. It's actually really, really bad here too. And we're dying here. And we're also facing police violence.
Thank you for giving that context. And I actually want to stay in the context of the history first before we continue to what's going on today. So you're describing events over the past 15 years. You've been living in Germany for 16 years. What is your connection to and role within Black Lives Matter? And what are the primary sort of focal points of Black Lives Matter in Berlin?
To think about anti-racism or racism itself, we are fighting in a way that people in the United States had to fight 100 years ago. So there's a denial about what is racist. There's a denial to anything that can be construed as structural racism. And that goes all the way through the entire government. There's a lack of services. We're literally 100 years behind. It's kind of hard to describe, but one of my favorite examples to sort of talk about when I'm talking to other American activists that are in the United States is like, we can't even get them to accept that the N-word is a derogatory term. So one anecdotal example is I was actually involved in shadowing a court case where a guy with a Nazi tattoo that apparently wasn't visible when the Black person got attacked was screaming the N-word and trying to hit a Black person with a bottle. But because we couldn't see the swastika tattoo when the violence happened, it wouldn't get tried as a hate crime because the N-word isn't a racial slur. So we have that as an issue. We have, you know, when they use the word race in Germany, when they use the word Rasse, it's so loaded with the Holocaust that currently there's this thing called the Grundgesetz, which is essentially like, it's the rights of all humans in Germany. And there is a rule, an anti-discrimination rule within this law that says that you can't be discriminated against for sex. You can't be discriminated against for disabilities. You can't be discriminated against for Rasse. Now, what the German government's talking about is they want to remove the word race from the Grundgesetz. And their feeling is if they remove the word race, then we dealt with it and it's over.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you don't have the word race, then you can't have the word racism. So problem solved? Is that?
Yeah.
Is that it?
That's kind of it. And then, but then they're like talking about replacing it with other words. And then some of the words they're talking about replacing it with are like, you know, ethnic background or like racial identity. There's all these different words they're coming up with. But basically all it creates is like a legal hole in which you can't actually sue. You can't actually sue anyone for discrimination based off of race. And it actually opens up another hole potentially where we can actually be sued for reverse racism, depending on the words they choose to use. So there is no concept of understanding of what the word race means. There's no actual understanding of what racism is. If you imagine like Americans getting annoyed with the few times they have to hear, oh, well, that's racist against white people. We hear that here every day, all the time, persistently and constantly. We're trying to fight a battle that should have already been like dealt with when Germany was like, okay, we're no longer going to do these things anymore. So we have that. We have the invisibility of Black people. We have the lack of Germany willing to deal with its colonial past. They don't get educated in their colonialism. There is an assumption from many Germans, white Germans, that Germany had no colonies. They forget that the Berlin Conference happened here, that the dividing up of Africa happened in Germany. They don't know that the first concentration camps that were ever created were created before World War I to exterminate Black people in Africa. So there's all this history. Even when they talk about the slave trade, it's always spoken about as if it was just the Dutch and the Portuguese and the Spanish. But when you study German history, you find out, oh, well, a lot of those Dutch boats were financed by German businesses. You can find the remnants of this stuff actually even here in Berlin, like on buildings. So the history is all there, but there's this unwillingness to deal with it, and there's this unwilling to acknowledge it. So when they think about Blackness or Black people, they speak about Black people as if they've just come over just recently from the Mediterranean. And so it's kind of like a multi-tiered issue because the community itself is like, we have Black Germans, we have Black Europeans, then we have Black Americans who are here, and then we have, you know, Black Africans, and then we have Black refugees, and anti-Blackness is such a big thing that hits so many different parts of our community.
Yeah.
And it doesn't ever seem that like we have the numbers of like being a lot of people here because there are no racialized statistics on anything. So the Bundespolizei, the National Police Force, put out a statement a few years ago where they said there's no racial profiling in Germany. And it was like, yeah, of course there's no racial profiling if you keep zero statistics on the race of the people that you stop.
We know what that is like in the United States. We have a president who thinks there is no COVID if you don't test for COVID.
Yeah.
So very familiar with the idea.
So this is Germany with race. There is no racism because we have no racialized statistics on anything, which they don't collect because of their fear of when they did collect them in the past. When we look at when they collected racialized statistics, that was pre-Holocaust. So there's this fear of doing it, but then it gives sort of Black activists here really very little legs to stand on because we have a lot of like anecdotal stuff and we're collecting the statistics on our own, but then the government doesn't want to take it seriously because it's not coming from them.
And is there any understanding, because, you know, we get a version of the German story here, and I think even of Brian Stevenson at the Equal Justice Initiative, who often highlights Germany's response to the end of World War II and the end of the Holocaust as a much better version of reckoning with history. Like, you don't have Nazi soldier statues the way we have Confederate statues, which are increasingly coming down, but it's a much delayed thing. So Germany is often held up as a particular example. Merkel is held up as an example of inviting of migrants versus other Europeans. And then the EU in general seems like an example of a better safety net and all these things which feel so much more progressive and just like snap your fingers, it's better. But you're coloring that picture with a bit more nuance for us. How do you feel about that sort of Americanized version of Germany's role around these issues of integration and justice with what you know to be the deeper history and the current experience?
Well, we currently have a minister of the interior who said that integration failed, right? There is no real concept of integration if you have fourth generation people, whether they're Black or whether they're other POC people, that still aren't considered by the larger society to be German, despite the fact that they've been four or five generations here, because they don't look German. And I always like to, you know, and then this idea of the statues are coming down. Yeah, of course, there's no Hitler statues, but we have statues and monuments and street names of the people who murdered hundreds of thousands of Africans in their colonies prior to World War I. Those street names still exist. Activists here have been asking for over 30 years for Germany to take these things down, and they haven't taken them down. You know, we got lucky last year where they swapped like a few street names. We even have a street in the middle of Berlin that is another word for the N-word, because there's multiple words for the N-word here. And the street is named that. And Black activists here have been asking for over 30 years, can you please change this street name to just any other name? And it's still not changed. There's an U-Bahn station that also has the big sign with the name of the street on it. We call it Endstrasse, so we don't say the word. So we still have all these remnants here that the German government doesn't want to think about or doesn't want to look at. And it's like, okay, if we look at the fact, okay, yes, there were reparations paid to some Jewish families. There was some reckoning of these things, but at the same time, there wasn't really a full reckoning of it. You know, if we go in the past and we look at like who was running Germany after World War II, you know, a lot of the people weren't that different. And just because they chose to deal with this one issue, this one group of people, doesn't mean that they didn't continue to discriminate the other people that they were also interning and putting into concentration camps, like Roma and Sinti people, like Black people, Armenian people. There are all these other people that were also victims of the Holocaust. They didn't get to see the same kind of like reckoning as the Jewish community did because they were such smaller groups. So on that side, it's like, okay, yeah, you know, but then on the flip side, okay, we have socialized healthcare. We have really great gun control laws. There's all these other mechanisms that are in place that are quite good. So it is, you know, it is definitely a lot easier to live here in the sense of you don't have to worry about dying on the street immediately. But we have records of neo-Nazis who are in the police, you know, and if a neo-Nazi is in the police force, there's nothing we can do about it. There's no mechanisms in place that we can fight that off with. And even the German government and the police force itself, when they do find these people, we find out that like, oh, they knew about this for 6 months, 7 months before they actually did something. So the system of policing has been broken. Racial profiling has been made legal in Berlin and actually German-wide. We have this freedom of movement that's supposed to be allowed throughout the European Union. According to like a high case in the German version of the Supreme Court, a Black man tried to take the police to court because he said, you can't stop me for crossing the border between Netherlands and Germany. And then the basis of the police being able to stop him was it was based off of his previous experience with stopping other people. And the high court agreed with the cops. So they basically legalized racial profiling. All these things are becoming legal and they're basically spreading across the entire country. And because of that, you know, on one hand, okay, maybe it's not as bad. It's a lot easier to sort of to deal with in the sense where it's like we don't see people being murdered by the police every day.
Yeah.
But we still see people being murdered by the police, and the people who are being murdered are Black people and POC people. And then in the European Union, you know, the European Union is a complete joke. They put out a statement that said like they're pro Black Lives Matter. I'm like, that's really great that they wanted a virtue signal and say Black Lives Matter. That's great. But what about the hundreds of thousands of Black people who are dying in the Mediterranean trying to get over here? And the reason why they're trying to get over here is because their countries or where they come from have been so destroyed by European imperialism and colonialism. That's the only reason why they're coming here, because we destroyed their countries. So they're coming here, and EU puts out a statement saying, great, Black Lives Matter, but at the same time, they're fighting boats, dinghies, trying to come over from the Mediterranean, and they're shipping people back to countries where they're probably going to be killed. So you can't say Black Lives Matter and select and choose which Black life matters in that context. And so these are the kinds of things that we're dealing with here, where it's like, it's very selective. Like, you know, there is a lot of like exceptionalism where, you know, this example of, here's an example of a great Black person. And like, this is what we should all strive to be. But anyone who's not that, we don't care about their life. They don't matter.
Yeah. So bring me up to date to late May, early June, 2020, when on American TV sets, we're seeing people all over the world say Black Lives Matter, and you're involved in that in Berlin. How did the demonstrations in your city come to pass?
Well, the very first demonstration that happened, I guess it was like a few days after George Floyd was murdered, several like POC organizations were in contact with different groups. And they decided to hold the very first demonstration, which had 2,000 people, which was really big for a Black Lives Matter demonstration.
Is that like every Black person in Berlin? Or?
Well, so that's the thing, though, right? So then you have a lot of white people showing up. Mm-hmm. And it's great that they're showing up, but it's also very dangerous when they show up, because a lot of white German people, when they come to these things, they're looking at them through the lens of USA is so bad. And they don't want to deal with the context of what it is to exist here. And I actually spoke at the first demonstration, and I called everyone out at the first demonstration. There were a lot of F words said.
Like German F words or actual like English?
I think I spoke in English. I was very emotional and I couldn't really handle doing it in German. And I started in German, where I explained to everyone I would only speak English. But it's this thing where it's like, you know, they hear these words, they come out, and they want to talk about how bad it is in the United States, but they don't want to look at the conditions of what it is to exist as a Black person in Germany. So I spent a lot of time in my speech sort of trying to turn the conversation onto, let's talk about Orijala, let's talk about these people who have died here, let's talk about women refugees fighting for their lives in these internment camps that they're putting them in inside of Germany. So if you make it over the Mediterranean, if you make it to Germany, they basically lock you away. And then it got worse with COVID. And so there were all those sort of things happening.
Baratunde here, but just talking to you, not to Diana. I'm cutting my own interview off because I want you to hear for yourself what Diana said at that rally that she's just described. And I could just let you hear her talk about it or could insert a piece of it. So here's the first 3 minutes of her speech. It starts off with a bit of German. Don't be afraid. Beautiful language. She'll get to English very, very quickly.
Okay, I'm Diana. I'm from Black Lives Matter Berlin. Ich lebe seit 15 Jahren, also 16 Jahren in Berlin schon. So, falls ihr mich nicht versteht, also ihr könnt so alles schon sowieso so auf den Black Lives Matter Page sowieso finden, eventuell. I'm from Virginia. Charlottesville was not that long ago. And I have been to too many of these marches. And I have seen too many of your faces. And let me just say this right now though. Black people, I love you. I love that all of you are here. And I love if you need this, if you need to be here, whatever you need right now, if you need to mourn, if you need to yell, if you need to stay the fuck home, whatever you need. Because it's about us right now. It's about us right now. And there's a lot of people who want to organize, and there's a lot of people who like don't know where to go. You can come to us. We are looking for people. We are small. We do not have all the capacities in the world. And we are trying to help people on the ground. We have been posting online. We have been vetting like fundraisers. We have been vetting like where to send emails. We have been vetting where you need to put your fucking Unterstützung, okay? It's like, we gotta do better than just being fucking activists online reposting shit without knowing where the hell it comes from. It's not good. It's not good enough. All right? But Black people, I love you, and I love that you're here, and I love if you're not here, and whatever you need. But I came here to talk to the white people who are gonna be here, and the white people who like to show up, and the white people who are never really around when there's no video. Because there's a lot of anger right now because there were two videos back to back. But there were two other people who died where there was no video. Breonna Taylor died. And it was like a month before it even really came into the news. They tried to hide that shit. You know, right after George died, Tony McDade, who's a trans man in Florida, was also murdered. But ain't nobody talking about him. Nobody. Because there's no video. And I'm tired of seeing y'all when there's a video. Because there is enough black deaths. Not even black deaths in the United States. There's enough black deaths here where y'all don't show up. And I know some of y'all are here today. Some of y'all wrote Black Lives Matter asking us, oh, what are you gonna do? Like, what can we, you need to do something, you need to do something. A lot of white people wrote us asking us to do something. None of y'all wrote us to ask us what we need. Not one of you. And I'm over it. I'm done with it. Racism is your fault. You invented this shit. White supremacy is your fault. You invented this shit. And if you are not fighting against it when there is not a video, then you are part of the problem. We're tired. We're so fucking tired.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage, for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whew. Yeah, Diana was real fired up, right? Especially at white Germans who love to point the finger of racism at the USA without looking internally. Now let's just return to my interview with Diana.
Yes, this is bad what's happening in the United States, but we have shit we can fix here. And let's fix these things here. And let's not just point the fingers at the bad Americans for how bad they are, because we've got a lot of bad seeds here. And this is, you know, what the German election was, what, 2017. And we saw for the first time in history a right-wing party make it into parliament. And a lot of people aren't taking the AfD really seriously, but they're saying things that are basically ripped from Mein Kampf. Mm. We're seeing, there's news articles about police being involved with AfD members, feeding them information for investigations when they are investigating into like left groups, right? Horst Seehofer, who's the innenminister, he changed the way that they put together statistics for like high crimes to terror crimes, right? And it used to be they would look at left terror, right terror, and then foreign groups.
Okay.
And then he added a fourth category, which is called it's Deutschfeindlichkeit, which is anti-German. And so he's looking into trying to come up with statistics for people who are against Germans, which in Germany doesn't really exist.
Okay.
And on our research and looking in that, you know, it's one way for him to try to like drop the statistics for right-wing groups. And it's another way for him to say, okay, well, if other groups are saying things that can be considered anti-German, which is anything that's not about like this white German ideal, then that can be categorized into that group. And you can have better statistics than the current statistics. So this is, for me, this is like this reverse racism idea coming into the forefront. So there was a demo on the Saturday. There was another demonstration on the Sunday that was also 5,000 people. And then on the 6th of June, a couple of young activists who actually were not connected to anyone and nobody knew who they were until after, decided to hold a demonstration at Alexanderplatz. And at that demonstration, according to the police, there was 15,000 people there.
Okay.
According to the demonstrators, they think the count is much higher than that. They think it's probably 30. And at the end of that, there ended up being 96 people arrested, the majority of whom were Black or POC, and half of them were actually children. They were under 18. But out of 30,000 protesters, how many of those were actually Black was very, very low. The percentage of people that were actually Black people were very, very low. And so the fact that the cops were there in full riot gear and were ready to sort of like break heads, and then they managed to bust a lot of heads of a lot of Black or brown people in a crowd of 15,000 or 30,000, depending on whose numbers you look at, where, you know, a fraction of that number were actually Black and POC. So, you know, but it's this thing where it's like it keeps going, and there's been demonstrations. There was another one last week. There's another demonstration planned on July 4th. There's another demonstration coming on the 18th. There's basically, it's going to keep going. And part of it is in solidarity with the United States, but then it's also about like, let's talk about Black lives worldwide. Let's talk about what this means to be Black everywhere. All of this stuff is everywhere. And we're seeing the same things with activists that we talked to from the UK. Switzerland is doing quite a bit. There's even a Black Lives Matter group in Latvia.
Latvia?
That we just found out about. They just wrote us and we found out about them. The Finns have been out protesting and demonstrating too. Black people in Finland have been protesting. And so it's kind of this amazing thing where we're seeing, where I'm seeing at least for the time that I've been here, the first time that there's been a lot of attempts at sort of communicating across the borders and sharing tactics and ideas and plans, and also just like seeing Black communities where we kind of just wrote off and didn't think there was anyone. But it's so exciting to see that, like, despite the fact that the communities here, you know, because it's so intersectional, we're dealing with so many complicated issues, and we don't even all speak the same language either, right? So we have,
like, you know, literally, you don't all speak the same language.
We literally do not speak the same language. So we have French-speaking Black folks. We have Arab-speaking Black folks. We have the German-speaking Black folks. And then the ones who only speak English. And, you know, we had a big meeting, actually. There was actually a big meeting today where we were trying to meet with just, like, Black organizers or an activist from just the Berlin scene.
Okay.
And one of the groups that came, we had to translate for them because they could only talk in French. And a few people who came could only speak English. And the majority of us who were there speak German, but we couldn't do the meeting in German because we had these few people who couldn't speak French or German. So we're kind of trying to navigate it on that point. And then there's so many different issues, you know, where it's like, you know, like, especially like Black refugees and like what they're going through. And it's not only what they're going through when they're on their way here, but what happens to them when they come here. And they're so separated from the rest of us, too. So it's really complicated.
My last formal question, but in the U.S., we've had a quick coalescing around this demand to defund the police.
Yeah.
And there is, yes, a broad umbrella of Black Lives Matter, and there's a lot of demands underneath of those. But defund the police has become the refrain. And we've seen motion more quickly than we've seen before. We're past the body cams. We're past the citizen oversight boards. It's now about budgets and alternative modes of public safety and shifting that money. Is there a similar narrowing or coalescing around, if not one echoing call, a shorter list of needs and demands to emerge from what sounds like a very diverse group of Black Lives Matter in Berlin and Germany and even across Europe?
I mean, we're still putting it together, right? And we're still talking, we're trying to talk to everyone and like find out where everybody is and what their needs are. And defund the police is definitely on our list. Crime is the lowest it's ever been in 30 years, but the police got a 12% increase, which is like, for what? If crime is at a 30-year low, then why do the police need more money?
So we're asking the same questions in the US, and I had hoped that was like our thing. I'm like, oh, America's crazy. But the reasonable trains on time Germans, like they won't be. But you're telling me, you're telling all of us, y'all have the same inflated police budgets in a time of record low crime that we do. That's disappointing. Okay. Break my heart some more. Break my heart some more.
They're not as inflated as yours, okay. but it's ridiculous. It just makes no sense at all. And considering like how much violence is perpetrated against Black folks here, there's even less reason to give the cops more money. So defunding the police is definitely one of them. Freedom of movement is definitely a really, really, really high up on our list. If you look Black and you're crossing borders in Europe, the way that people are treated is widely different. It definitely, you know, for me, it's pretty easy. I have an American passport, but if I'm traveling with someone who's darker skinned than me, even if they had an American passport, I don't think they would be treated as well as I would be. And there just needs to be like actual real freedom of movement is what we were promised with the formulation of the EU needs to be guaranteed for Black people.
Yeah.
There's the removing of all this colonialist remnants, statues, street names, all of this stuff needs to go. One, there needs to be full recognition of like actual what structural racism is and the fact that it exists in all levels of Germany, including the German government. In the current formulation of how the rules work is that if you experience discrimination from a German government office, you cannot file a complaint because officially they don't discriminate.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Wait, that's kind of a circular, that's convenient rhetorical trap there. Like, I need you to say that again. Maybe I misheard.
A German government office, like a federal office, cannot discriminate against me because they do not discriminate. So if I experience discrimination from a German government office and want to file a complaint, I can't file a complaint because officially they do not discriminate.
That is magic. That is one way to end systemic racism or oppression, is just to declare it doesn't exist. Okay. So you're trying to,
So there needs to be full recognition of structural racism.
So you got some work to do.
Yeah. Like I said, we're 100 years behind, right?
Oh, man.
And it makes sense in a place that could create Kafka that this would be like how it would work. I feel like Black people here, we're living perpetually in the trial and Bill Murray's Groundhog Day. Like, this is literally like this is the role that we're in constantly. And that one for me takes the cake. So they just passed in Berlin, like a local law that says that we can file complaints from city offices for discrimination. And now the rest of Germany is up in arms about it. And they're super mad about it. And now they're saying they're no longer going to send, if Berlin needs cops for whatever event, they're not going to send police here. They're not going to help out. And then Horst Seehofer, the Minister of the Interior, this genius, he was like, oh, don't worry about it. Like, the Berlin law won't apply to any other states who send people here. So like if Munich sends cops here, they won't fall under the discrimination law of Berlin because they don't want us to be able to sue the cops for discrimination.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and we only have this in Berlin. This is a little fleck of the entire country, and that law needs to happen everywhere. I would say from Black Lives Matter in Berlin and from several other organizations, a lot of us think that Horst Seehofer just needs to be fired. He needs to go. He cannot be the Minister of the Interior. Angela Merkel needs to cut that cord.
But not for discrimination, because they don't do that. You'd have to find some other reasons to fire him.
I think the fact that like the level of like reports of Nazis in the police force, and now there's, it's not like SWAT, but it's some like high level force. I don't know if it's in the police or in the army. They have to dismantle it because there are so many right wing people in it.
Wow. And like when you say right wing people, can you define that a little more? Because I don't want to give the impression, unless it's true, that it's the equivalent of like there were Republican police officers. Like you're using right wing as something.
They're Nazis.
There we go. Okay.
Yeah. They want to destroy and kill everyone who does not look or feel or smell like a prototypical white, blonde hair, blue eyed German. Yeah. Maybe if you're a brunette, you can stay.
Maybe.
You know, if your skin's a little too tan, that might be problematic for them. Yeah. So for me, it's like these are, you know, when we say right wing here, we're not talking about Republicans. We are talking about white people who want to kill other people for the mere problem of existing in their eyes. you know, the AFD says this stuff, the NPD says this stuff, there's a lot of right-wing groups that say all this stuff, and basically their whole premise is that Germany needs to remain German, despite the fact that this idea of Germany that they are fixated on is the Germany that Hitler fixated on. That actually never existed. When I talk about, you know, what it's like here, this level of invisibility that Black and POC people have, Hitler did an amazing job, right? Like, in the fact that he convinced the world and he convinced Germans that to be German is to be this monolith, to be this one thing. And he erased the existence of the multiculturalism that was here, of the queerness that was here. The first transgender research library was in Germany and it was destroyed by the Nazis. Mm. That's in like the 20s or in the 10s. The Nazis destroyed it. There was definitely like a very like intersectional, multicultural like group of people who've like always been existing here. But then post-World War II, all of that gets erased. We're still today, when people talk about Germans, or when they look at Germans, or when they look at someone who is Black and German, they look at an Afro-German person, the first question out of their mouth is, where do you come from?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are so many echoes of what we are going through in the United States. And I want to thank you for being so clear and providing so much context for all of that. The ideal German, that idea, and like, who's really American? You know, the common framework is whiteness. Right.
Yeah.
And there is a white supremacy, which I experience from European fans, you know, of people who've seen my TED talk as one example. And what you've described of the white members of many of the rally goers of Black Lives Matter, they're similar here. It's like, oh, poor Americans. Oh, so savage, so brutal, so uncivilized.
Yeah.
And the unwillingness to look inside and see that very same trait in one's own society, one's own household. It's a common theme. So I guess thank you for reminding me and anyone listening to this that we have a lot more in common than may appear to be the case, certainly than the marketing materials would have us believe. Yeah.
I mean, one of the things too is that I think it was Natasha A. Kelly, she's a Black scholar here, a Black feminist here who does amazing work. She said something to this, and I'm paraphrasing and also adding on to it, but racism was invented in Europe, and Europeans like to forget that. The Americans might have like perfected the efficiency of it, but this came from here. And that's something that Europeans just kind of always forget when they think about these things, that it's an American problem. The Americans did it, you know, or like, you're bringing this because you're from the US. And it's like, no, I'm 16 years here and I'm looking at it in the flesh and seeing it happen every day. And I'm tired of having conversations of, you know, even the German media here, when they talk about this, the first question out of their mouth is, have you had experience with racism? What they ask a Black person or any other POC person. And it's like, we don't need to talk about the time that I experienced racism. We need to talk about the structures that forced me to experience racism. But they're not even prepared here in the media, in the government, in culture, in pretty much every part of civil society. They're not ready to have the conversation on the structural level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Diana, is there anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I see things like this. The longer people in the US fight and stay on the ground and keep pushing things forward, the bigger of a chance it is for Black people all over the world to become liberated. So I love everyone in the US who's on the ground, and we've been trying to support you from here as much as we can. And figuring out how people can send money from Germany to all the local organizations working on the ground. Cash App and Venmo do not work. So it's been this amazing energy that we've been able to also like feed off of and to bring together all the different parts of the Black community here so that we can work together and to fight for the things and fight for the liberation that we also need here. So keep up the great work over there, and keep up the fight. And then hopefully when this is all over, it'll be a lot easier for all of us to visit each other.
Yes.
In a much more beautiful, less racist world.
Diana Arce, auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen. Auf Wiedersehen. I was so close. I was so close to just crushing it at German. But alas, still more to learn. Thank you, Diana, for spending that time. That was Diana Arce of Black Lives Matter Berlin. You can find the organization on the internet at Black Lives Matter Berlin.de. And you can find them on Instagram, Black Lives Matter Berlin. Meanwhile, Diana's website is visualosmosis.com, and she's on Instagram as visualosmosis. There's one more point I want to add as we close out episode 5 together. Thank you for being here with me. Diana spoke about the opportunity that the U.S. provides Europeans to point out racism over there and kind of ignore it right here in the European context. And the funny thing to me is, Americans, we've done the same thing. It's this hot potato of racism and the accountability for it. We've been able to say for so long, well, we're not Hitler, we're not Nazis. And it turns out we're all messed up. We all got work to do. We're all steeped in the stew of white supremacy, trying to dig our way out. And that work will be made much easier if we all acknowledge the history that has created the present and take new actions to define a future that includes all of us. Thank you for listening. This has been episode 5 of We're Having a Moment. Hello, white people. Hello, world. Like a beast in the jungle, in the heat of the rumble, I ain't got nothing to lose. Hey, I've been fighting these hard times. We're Having a Moment is a production of iHeartRadio Podcasts. Executive produced by Miles Gray, Nick Stumpf, and Baratunde Thurston. Produced by Joelle Smith and Elizabeth Stewart. Edited by Justin Smith. Music by Aloe Black. You can find my email newsletter and a lot more at baratunde.com. If you do the social things, find me on Instagram at Baratunde. And if you like text messaging, well, send me one. That's right, you can text me right now. 202-894-8844. Just put the text WHAM, wham, in the message.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.